The Hoop Heads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist Jefferson Mason and marketing manager Nick Bartlett on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
I'm super excited about the Scholastic Blueprint because it's something that a lot of players are like, man, where was this at? You know, when I was in high school. It is the player's guide that's from mentality, in terms of not having the D1 or bust mindset and developing character and understanding that college coaches look at more than how high you can jump and how well you can shoot the tray ball. They look at the holistically. They look at you, which is why that's what we focus on when we develop players.
Joseph Harris II is the founder of Illusion Institute Basketball based in Houston, Texas. He is a Lamar University graduate with collegiate and overseas basketball experience. Joseph is assisted at Illusion by a staff with more than 12 years of experience in basketball, recruiting, and financial aid for college. He has experience coaching players one-on-one and in a team setting from middle school to the varsity level. Joseph has a track record of consistently improving the teams and players he has worked with and strives to help each student-athlete achieve their goals. His goal is to help each student-athlete he works with make their high school varsity team ahead of schedule or play basketball at the college level. Joseph has created the Scholastic Blueprint, an online course for student athletes to complete with the support of their parents. It serves as an excellent guide for players looking to achieve their dream of playing college basketball. Subscribe now to the Hoopheads podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. Believe it or not, those ratings help your friends and colleagues find the show. If you really love what you're hearing, recommend the Hoopheads pod to someone and get them to join you as a part of Hoopheads Nation. Don't forget to visit our HoopheadsPod.com website, where you can listen to every episode in our archive and get subscribed to our Hoopheads Pod newsletter. Get ready to learn from and be entertained by Joseph Harris II, creator of the Scholastic Blueprint and founder of Illusion Basketball Institute in Houston, Texas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Illusion Institute Basketball, Joseph Harris. Joseph, welcome to the Hoopheads podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Jason and Mike, I appreciate you guys having me on. When I was looking at all the different podcasts and you guys stood out like a sore thumb. So I'm excited about being here.
That's what we like to hear. It's always good to know that there's somebody out there listening. When you're putting all the time in and doing the work that we're doing, it's nice to know that there's somebody out there that listens to it. So we really appreciate that, and hopefully you're not alone as an audience member, and we really appreciate you reaching out to us, and I think you're going to have a lot of good things to share with the coaches and people that are part of our audience. They're going to want to hear about some of the things that you have going there with Illusion. So let's start out, though, by talking about your basketball background, and let's go back to the time when you were a kid
and talk to me a little bit about how you got into the game of basketball when you were younger and what your experiences were like as a young basketball player.
Well, it's not too stereotypical, but I was in Chicago in the cold, and I used to throw. I don't know if you're familiar with like you have a garage, right?
Oh yeah,
picture
oh, yeah.
a garage, right? And then you have the part between the top of the garage and the roof, that one little white, I don't know what it's called, but it goes from left to right. It's like a paneling. I don't know what it is, but I started off, I had a little volleyball type ball. I used to dribble and I used to throw it against that one little spot to, as a basketball. Like that's when I started off, like in the very beginning, I used to go and have my jacket on and I'm dribbling, pushing the snow to the side. And I used to shoot. It was basically only the backboard, but I used to be real picky. I had to hit a certain spot. So from there, and then that's when my mom came and got me and brought me from the mean streets, as they say, and brought me to and brought me to a safer environment for a young man to come up. So that's kind of the origins of me in basketball.
Very cool. That is very interesting. I know I have not a completely different experience, because I did actually have a rim on my basket when I was a kid, but I did have a basement from the time I was in second grade that there was a steel beam that went below the rafters in my basement. And so basically you would have a hole between two rafters and a beam. And I used to play in my basement with my neighbors and friends. We'd come over, and at that point it was just low enough that you could maybe try to dunk it through. So you'd be slamming your wrist against this steel beam, trying to slam it through this 12x12 hole. And those games were, I don't even know if you could call them basketball. They were sort of a mix of basketball and football. So I can relate to not shooting through a hoop, but actually trying to find a spot. So what was it that you liked about basketball when you were a kid? What was it that made you want to go out there and throw that ball up against the the side of your garage? What did you like about the game?
Well, first, just to the story you just said, it never ceases to amaze me the imagination of a child. Like,
true.
You were in the middle of a basement and with a metal pipe, and you might as well be at the United Center in Chicago.
So true.
You know, and same thing with me, with shooting on the side of the garage. But when what I always liked about basketball was how it's a game of improv. It's a lot of improvisation in the game of basketball. Like, it's something that if a play falls apart, if you have the skills and the ability, you can improvise and make a change and adjust to what's happening. It's a real fast-paced game going back and forth, back and forth. And I've always liked that element of it. And moving forward, when I got a little older, I started playing this game called 21. And I know you and Jason are very familiar with that game.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, five or six guys or however many playing, we're playing the 21.
So we used to call it, funny, because in different parts of the country, that game has different names. So
I was 33.
Yes.
So here in Cleveland, that's 33. So we would call that 33.
And you would go back to, I don't know what Mike played, because Mike's a little bit older than me.
It's the same.
But we would play, we would go, you had to get to 21 to be safe. And then if you didn't get to 21 and you got tipped, you were back to zero.
So let me ask you this. Let me ask you guys this. Did you guys shoot, when you scored, did you shoot from the top of the key 3-point line or the free throw line?
Free throws. Free throw line. We would shoot from the free throw line.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because we would shoot, the top of the key 3-pointer. That was our free throw.
It's funny. And just like we talked about the basement games getting a little physical, 33 ended up becoming, at various times, it might have looked more like a football
game.
Or rugby match. We actually had, I had a friend in high school who was, I don't know, he was probably 2 or 3 years older than me. And he had a guy that lived down the street from him who had it wasn't a full court. It was probably a legitimate half court, but he had a basket on either end of it. And one of the baskets was an 8-foot steel pole, steel backboard, steel reinforced rim. And so we would go and play 33 with an 8-foot basket where you could obviously do any kind of dunk that you wanted. So you can imagine how you're trying to go in and dunk on people. And it was crazy. As a 13 to 17 year old, that was fun and probably a little dangerous as you look back.
I think my favorite 33 story growing up is that there's a development across the street from from where I live. And we used to go over and they had an actual development court. And I still play on it every once in a while in the summer. Me and 10 buddies get together and we play over there. But we used to go over there all the time and we play 33. And the one side of the court's at 9.5 feet. And, when we were, juniors and seniors in high school, I could dunk on a 10-foot hoop if I was having a really good day. I never really was known for my hops. But when we played on the 9.5-foot side, I would do it real easily. Well, we were playing, and I decided that I was going to dunk in a 33 game. And when I went to dunk, I snapped the rim, and it broke. And I felt I felt like I was Shaquille O'Neal. But then I got really but then I got really upset when we weren't going to be able to play anytime soon because we had to depend on the homeowners association to fix the hoop. Because we were going to be able to do it.
So all right, now the mystery is solved. You're the reason why they started taking all the rims down.
That's right.
Right on the park.
Exactly.
Those hoops still stand, by the way.
Blame it on Jason.
Those hoops still stand. I don't know that they ever actually replaced the rim. I think they just put new bolts in because, I want to say 4 years ago when we were playing in the summer, I don't think it had been used very often and we would play on it, and it would get looser and looser. And then one time we were playing, we showed up on a Saturday morning, and the rim was literally hanging by one bolt. The other bolts had fallen out, so we had to bring our own ladders and replace it because we knew that it wasn't going to get replaced by the homeowners.
But at least there's a court there, right, Joseph? That's like 90%. That's 90% of the battle today. You want to play outdoor?
That's right.
You want to play outdoor basketball at a playground? Good luck.
Oh, good luck. Good luck. Then you know what? That's so true. And again, all you need is a couple guys to do that. Or girls.
Yep.
You just need a couple players to just get out there and play. And that to me, that to go back to what you mentioned earlier, that to me is one of the best parts about basketball. It is a team sport, but you can excel as an individual within the team concept if you have the proper skills and whatnot. So Jason, he's flying through the air with the greatest of ease. Right. Boom. Right.
He's making me look bad. I was doing all this on an 8-foot rim.
Well, I imagine, Mike, that you were the guy they couldn't leave open because you're making all of the jumpers. Mid-range assassin.
That's true.
He still has a record at Kent State for 3-pointers. So
I don't like to talk about all that, Jason. So.
Come on, I'm just saying.
It is. There's still. It's pretty good that I graduated in '92, and I think I've told this story. So I still have the record for threes. So I made 9 in a game there. So that's pretty good that record still stands. But then the oddball record that I have is I have the record for the most steals in a game. So I probably have, I think my career steal total might be 14, but I had 8 in one game. And my quote in the newspaper, when the reporter asked me about that, he said, do you know you set the record for most steals in a game tonight? He said, how did you do that? And my quote in the newspaper was, they just kept passing me the ball. So I don't attribute it to any real skill that I had or quickness or whatever. It was just one of those nights where, for some reason, the ball kept finding me. So it is kind of nice to still have 30 years after you're gone that, or almost 30 years after you're gone that you still have a couple records there. So it's kind of fun. But yeah, I definitely was not a high flyer. That's for sure. No question about that.
That's okay.
That's right.
You know what? It's funny that you say that because even it's like that's something that will never, ever, ever go out of style.
True.
Being able to shoot the tray ball or being able to shoot from the mid range or what have you. Shooting will never go out of style. You got the high flyers jumping. Elbows in the rim, and they try to get their shot together just to extend their career. So it's like that's something that would never go out of style, being able to shoot the ball.
There's no question about that. I think if you could give advice to any player, if you can shoot the ball, there's probably always going to be a spot for you. Coaches are always going to want somebody who can knock shots down. And if you're a kid out there, if you're a player and you can develop the kind of shot that a coach can rely on, you're going to give yourself a really good opportunity to be able to, you know, to be able to play. So talk a little bit more about your playing days. Give us an idea of just where you went with the game and maybe some memories from your high school career. Just talk a little bit about what you remember from your days as a player.
Well, I'll say one of my favorite memories of, as a player was my junior summer in high school. And I was selected to go play in Belgium at this tournament. And they had some other guys. It was like kind of my first experience with playing with other guys that I didn't know. I mean, from a can of paint. I mean, I didn't know who they were at all. We all come in and then we go. You know, we fly. It was the longest flight I had ever been on in my life at the time. And we went. And in the tournament, we ended up going to the championship. And though, I was a post player because I'm 6'6", which of course, you know, in college, that's average. But, in some high schools, that's right, tall.
That's tall in high school.
Yes, yes. And so I was playing the center. And we made it, our team made it to the championship. And it was a real close game. And speaking of shooting, there was a mic on the team. All right. That's all he did.
All right, there you go.
Trey Ball.
All right.
That's it.
It wasn't me. I was not in Belgium. I've never been in Belgium, so it wasn't me.
Man, so anyway, the game got, and we were playing against this team from Poland. And they had some, I mean, it's like these tall guys, all of them were tall. The guy I was guarding was like taller than what I was. But anyway, so he goes in, I think we were down by two because I'm going to call him Mike. So Mike shoots the three because I forgot his name, but Mike shoots this, buzzer beater within the last 30 seconds. So anyway, like the course of events in the game, that big guy drove in and, you know, I jumped up, block it, and I'm, scream and all of that. And then all the crowd goes, like that. So it's real heated. It's like emotional. And then people chanting in the audience and all of that. And my heart is pumping a million miles a minute. So I blocked the shot. And then, cause he looked surprised. Said, you know, cause a lot of times if a guy is taller, he's the tallest player on the court. Same thing on the girl side. The tallest player, they're like the big wolf in the forest that nobody talks to because they just don't dare to. But really, they're just as scared as you are. So he was surprised that I contested him, and he was surprised by that. So I jump up, boom, block the shot. I scream, and then the other guy, the point guard gets the ball. His name was Derek. Derek gets block the shot. Derek gets it. He passed it to Mike. Mike dribbles on the right wing. He takes a couple dribbles. And he pulls up from that right wing three-pointer. Pow! Knocks it down. All net. Start going crazy. So we up by one. And then we steal the ball from them, then we run the clock out, right? So then everybody runs the floor. It was like it was so awesome. Like that moment was awesome. So then everybody runs the floor like this. The Cameron crazies running in the floor. And then everybody's jumping up and down, going crazy. And they start chanting, USA, USA. Oh, man.
That's awesome. It was like you got an Olympic experience.
Oh, I mean, it felt like, you know, so that was a phenomenal experience. And that's something that, and then when I came home, I got a chance to, my English teacher helped me, and this is going to get more into my why in a moment. But when I got home from that, my English teacher, her name was Miss Hancock. Miss Hancock said, "Hey, Joe, congratulations." I came back. I was super pumped. And she said, the newspaper wants you to write an article. Just write about your experience there. So I write it. And of course, my English teacher, Miss Hancock, is like, "Oh, well, let me help you with that." So I didn't know it at the time, but my tone was very negative. Like, I did it in spite of X. I did it in spite of Y.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, so-and-so said I couldn't do this, but I did anyway. That whole vibe, right?
Right, little chip on your shoulder.
Yes, I had a chip on my shoulder because, as I said, it's going to allude to my why. My high school coach, I felt, at the time, just didn't believe in me or didn't, I guess, I don't know, promote or like, I don't know. I can't explain it. I felt that he just didn't seem to have my back the way I would assume that a coach should. So when I wrote it, the first draft, Miss Hancock was like, Joe, you can't send this to the paper. Cause I wasn't disrespectful. It was just negative, like a chip on my shoulder, like you said. So then when I did that, we did a redraft. And then, of course, we sent it to the newspaper, and then the newspaper just printed it as is, and everybody read it, and I put the in there with 12 exclamation points and all of that. So it was like, it was real fun. And that was like the long version. I probably went a little longer than I should have, but that was one of the best memories in basketball for me.
Yeah, that's very cool that you got that experience as a high school kid to be able to travel and then come back, and through that writing to be able to, I'm sure, force you to reflect on what the experience was like. And I think a lot of times, especially when we're younger, and I know I can speak for myself, that you kind of go through and you have these experiences, and they're rich, and they're so emotional in the moment that you don't necessarily always go back and reflect on the experiences that you have when you're younger. And I would suspect that for you, especially when you had your English teacher be willing to help you and kind of help you to process that whole thing, that had to be able to really get you to think about what the experience was like, both from a basketball and a cultural perspective, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. Well said. I agree 100%. Very much so.
So, all right, let's lead that into, you mentioned that it's kind of leading towards your why. So let's think about, while you're still playing, is there a thought that someday you'd like to stay involved in the game as a coach, or was that something that came later as you started looking around and trying to figure out what you want to do with your life? Just talk a little bit about how coaching came to be important to you and why you were drawn in that direction.
Well, when I found out that coaching matters, it's like, as I continue to play, I discovered that coaching makes a big difference. And like, the right coach can pull every ounce of potential out of a player, like squeezing the bottom of that toothpaste, everything. And some coaches just can't.
Right.
And then when I started to recognize the difference, that's kind of what sparked it in me. Like, I want to be able to take that player that doesn't quite believe in themselves just yet and put that in them and make them feel they can fly. Even if their wings may not be as big as another player, but they feel, you know what, I can do this, and give them the direction. And that was, I guess, the seed that was planted. And then when I started to coach and I saw the before and after, I got addicted to the change, like from game one to game 20, that change and then improvement. And that's the same thing with like skills training 101 or coaching a team. In either case, to see that before and after is what really drives me.
Yeah, I love that. I love that what is important to you is the improvement. And, you know, there's a lot of talk out there in basketball and in sports today about focusing on the process as opposed to the result. And I think that concept has been around for a long, long time, but it hasn't always been verbalized in such a simple way as saying, hey, we focus on the process. But that's what I hear you saying, is the process of helping a kid, a player, a team improve and get better is what excites you. And I go along with the other thing that I hear you saying, and that when we talked previous to the podcast, and just knowing and seeing the things that you have going on, which we're going to talk about as we move forward here, is it's not just seeing them improve as a basketball player in terms of their ability to shoot a jump shot or execute a crossover dribble or some other fundamental basketball skill. It's also seeing them improve as people and as teammates and as someone whose character is getting better as a result of interacting with you as a coach. So talk a little bit about why that piece of it is so important to you, because I think it's a key component to your story.
You know what? That is very important to me, and I'm glad that that you picked that up out of our previous conversation and what us speaking right now. That it's important to me because sometimes, like if you visualize a pie chart, a lot of players sometimes don't understand that basketball is just one sliver of that pie. And they will base their relevance and how and their value as a person around how well they play the game of basketball. And I think that that's something that they need to understand, that basketball is only a part of you. It's just, it may accent your life and complement what you're doing and help you build confidence, but basketball is absolutely a tool. Now, if they're fortunate enough to play at the college level, fantastic. The pro level, fantastic. But basketball, like many sports, teaches life lessons that without the sport, you may not learn. And to me, that's why the holistic approach is so valuable and priceless, because when you're developing skills, that's great. But if you're like when you made those 9 3-pointers in the game, if you missed your first two, if Mike doesn't have the mentality, the mental fortitude to push through, you know what? I'm going to shoot again. I might go 0-for-3, but I'm going to shoot again. That's character. For you to have the belief in yourself, the confidence and things like that, that's something that is often overlooked in terms of development. It really is. It's like, oh, well, you know, Jason has it or he doesn't. Mike has it or he doesn't. Joseph has it or he doesn't. When that's not true, when all they may need is a little nudge, and then they'll start believing or they'll start practicing the positive character trait that they need to work on. And sometimes it's overlooked. The same way that I think sometimes skills are kind of overlooked, like, oh, they kind of have it or they don't. But another reason why I really like basketball is that it is absolutely a skill sport. No question. Like it helps to jump high and run fast. But if you don't have the skills such as ball handling and shooting, you're going to plateau. You can only dunk on guys at a certain level. And then when everybody jumps like you, now you got to learn how to finish with your left hand, for example.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that's so true. When you just said that about, you know, athleticism being, you know, a piece that certainly is helpful, but if you don't have the skills, you can't really execute it. I think of a guy like, and I'm going to date myself here. I don't know if Jason will see if he gets the reference, but you know, Carl Lewis was a tremendous track athlete back in the day, you know, 100-meter runner and long jumper, and just, you know, from a running and jumping standpoint, was probably one of the greatest athletes of all time. And then I remember that he threw out the first pitch at, I don't know if it was a World Series game, and he threw the ball, like, into the ground, like, 2 feet in front of him. And because he didn't have that, that was not a skill that he had. And to your point, basketball is very much a skill-driven sport. And as a result, when you put the time in to work on those skills, it's something that you can improve on very, very quickly if you're willing to put the time in. And I think the other side of that you mentioned is talking about how not only are you developing their physical skills, but there are also mental skills that are involved in being a good player and being able to perform in a game situation.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the Jay Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the Jay Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th, and will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the Jay Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp Veterans and includes the J. Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered.
Question that I wanted to ask you is, when you first started out coaching, did you have the same thought process in terms of thinking about the character piece of it, the life lessons? Was that part of your motivation right from the very beginning, or was that something that you came to later as you really started to get into coaching? Which one would you say better described you?
I'd say that's something, now it may sound a little cheesy, but from the beginning, I was all about the character development. Like, I would make, for example, there was a player that on this team I was coaching, and he was an upperclassman. There was an upperclassman, and he kind of knew the play we were working on, right? It was a play called, what was it called? We called it Water.
Okay.
So this play called, it was a man play. It was against the man defense. And this play called Water, I won't say his name, but he knew the play and he knew it well. And he's the point guard. And now this other guy is a couple years younger and he didn't quite grasp it yet because Water is based on you kind of thinking for yourself. You're not necessarily, it's like a flowing offense.
Right.
So anyway, he says, the older guy, it was like, oh, man, you don't know it yet. Oh, we got to run it again. He started doing that, right? And so then I stopped practice. I said, no, wait a minute. Whoa. You act like you were just born knowing this play. Like you had to learn it the same way he had to learn, right? So then, of course, I made him run and push-ups and all of that to make him understand the value of leadership. And like he will follow this underclassman will follow you. If you lead him, he's going to follow you. But he's not going to follow you if you're downgrading him and insulting him for not knowing the plays and whatnot. So anyway, that's something that has always been important to me because I know that, Father Time is undefeated. So eventually you're no longer going to be able to play this game of basketball.
Yeah, unless you're LeBron James.
Well, yeah, unless you're LeBron James, a physical specimen, like LeBron
Father
James.
Father Time may win that game eventually, but man, LeBron is making it awful tough on Father Time.
Yeah, he's giving Father Time a run for his money. Him and Tom Brady, yeah, both of them.
Right, I agree.
And I want the record to reflect that I did know who Carl Lewis was because I didn't feel like I addressed that situation.
Okay, I'm glad.
He was competing in Atlanta in '96, I think. Right. I feel like that was.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's Michael Johnson.
No, I know. Yes, I'm pretty
Carl
sure
Lewis was not around in
I think he was.
No,
because I'm gonna fact check you.
His big year was the 84. Was the 84?
Well, I'm pretty sure that he did it for
check.
15 years.
Get on it right now.
Okay, I'm gonna fact check.
Jason's getting on that tangent right away. So anyway, go ahead. Sorry. Continue with what you were talking about. I didn't mean to interrupt you on the Father Time.
No, that's okay. Because you're right. LeBron, and I'll say Tom Brady is a little different because his position doesn't require the physicality that LeBron is playing. Like he's like running around and taking contact, whereas Brady is a little bit different. But anyway, so like you're saying, I totally agree. But that's something that I believe those lessons never leave you. Like the mental toughness, like how to handle when things don't go your way, how to work with a team, how to handle a loss graciously, how to handle the win graciously, all of these things that carry with you forever and they don't go anywhere. So to me, for example, with the young man I was just telling you about, that was a practice. That is something that the next year, later in the season, matter of fact, but the next year, he would handle underclassmen totally different. So now that life lesson, when he graduates and he's gone and he may be a supervisor. Now, instead of saying, I can't believe you don't know this policy yet, or I can't believe you don't know how to use the Skype yet, right? So instead of doing that, he's going to do it in a way that makes the person that he's supervising want to follow him, you know? So that's a lesson in that example anyway. That's a lesson that he'll carry forever. And that's why it's important to me.
I want to reflect that I was correct that Carl Lewis won the gold in long jump in 1996.
Carl Lewis was an even better athlete than I thought.
He was 35 years old. He won the gold medal in the long jump.
Now that this is all coming together, I do remember that he won the long jump. But I didn't think he went it all the way to 96, but Carl Lewis was
he was 35 years old when he won the long jump. That's pretty impressive.
He was an incredible athlete when it came to running and jumping. There's no doubt he's one of the all-time best. So, all right, so let's talk a little bit. Let me ask you, compare and contrast doing one-on-one training / coaching, however we want to define it, versus coaching a team. Give me one thing about each that you really like that makes that an enjoyable process for you. So what do you like about coaching in a team setting? And then what do you really love about coaching in a one-on-one setting?
Well, in the team setting, to see that gelling take place, to see them start to learn each other. Like when I coach the high school players, guys or girls, because I've coached both, a lot of times coaches want to hide their players in zone, particularly the 2-3. So they want to hide them. And then when it's time to play man, they are as lost as a babe in the woods.
That is true.
They don't know ball you man. They don't know where to go. They play hug me defense. They're like hug their person all over the place and things like that. So anyway, the basic man-to-man principles, they don't know. So early on, we work on man defense, and they're like, "Oh, coach, can we do man? I mean, can we do zone?" No, we'll do that time to time. We'll whip it out, but to just live in a particular zone, we're not doing that. So you're gonna learn how to play big boy defense. That's what we're gonna do today. So then we'll learn how to do that. And Mike, Jason, I know both of you can attest to this, but in the very beginning, open layups, open lanes. Cause no help, no nothing. They just
is. Hey, you can say, drive, you say you in can the drive. Beginning. I say at the end of the season, my man.
So it's like the way that towards the end of the by the time district starts or when they get a couple games behind their belt, the way they'll talk and communicate and say, "Oh, I got your back. Oh, screen, pick left, pick right," et cetera, et cetera. All of that. And to see them gel and know what to do and start to understand, all right, now we learn how to play basketball. We're learning how to play now. To see that is great to see. And then when the parents are like, "Wow, they look totally different." Like they would run around like that old football game, which is, and then the guys are just rotating and just vibrating all over the place. They don't know where they're going. Or like chickens with their hair cut off. Right. They don't know what's going on. But later on, when they start to get it, to me, that's one of my favorite parts about coaching in a team setting. In the terms of one-on-one, when the one-on-one training is when that light bulb goes off, when you just teach them something new, for example, where their elbow should be on a shot or learning how to keep their head up when they're dribbling or maybe a particular crossover. Like I like to teach. I know you guys know who Tim Hardaway is, and with the killer crossover, or the UTEP two-step.
Right. Well, it's funny that you say that because you know you think about where the game has gone now in terms of how guys handle the ball and the different things that you can do with the dribble. And I think there's, if you go back to maybe the day when you were playing or when I was playing, a lot of the dribbling that goes on today would have been called a carry back in my day. But the killer crossover just was so revolutionary. And now you can look at it, and I would say a lot of middle school guards have that in their arsenal. But at the time when Hardaway broke that out, it was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe he's putting that two combo move together." That's incredible.
We're talking about the guy who plays for the Knicks, right?
he's not quite up on that. No, he's kidding. But yeah, that's. I mean, it was revolutionary at the time.
That's a good point. Actually, you're right. That, which, you know, there can be debated, like, you know, maybe they see a little too much and-one tape and and-one highlights, you know, where they're doing a little too much dribbling. But you're right. I don't want to get too sidetracked, but, you know, a lot of those guys, they want to do all the dribbling. But
right,
back off 2 feet. Uh-oh. Now the world is about to end because you're not going to make this jumper. That's not going to happen. So, yeah. You know, because you're dribbling all the time. But like, for example, with it, like you said, with it, and it was revolutionary at the time. It was something that's like, oh, man, what is this? You know, thing, so
right? Yep.
Is this? And that's why guys was on skates left and right. So when I would show them a dribble move, what I like about or helping them improve their shooting form, following through and snapping your wrist and things like that. When that light bulb goes off and they see their work equate to success on the floor, like after the game is over. So they do, you know, a month's worth of skill training or whatever. And then they say, oh, this happened. Because I worked on this, and it worked just like this. So that was because there was this one player that we worked on, pivot foot. Now, this is something that's mundane and overlooked, but it's priceless. It's like peanut butter and jelly. It just never really goes out of style. It's like you can go get steak and lobster, but, you know, you can always fall back on it. You got your fundamentals together. So we worked on the pivot foot, where to have, protect the ball, all the other good stuff. So he goes and does it in the game, and he's super excited because the light bulb goes off because he sees, oh, that's why I was doing X.
Right.
That's why. So to see that light bulb when they see, oh, did you see? I just made, now, you know, for maybe for Mike, this may not be a big deal, but five, like they would make five jumpers in a row. I see Mike, he may have been to make 15 in a row. But for him, for this kid, that five in a row is a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like, wow, you know, I just made the five in a row because of the hard work you put in. So when they see that light bulb go off and see their work translate to being successful in a team setting, that's what I like.
Yeah, I love that. I love another piece that I'm going to pull out of what you just said is thinking about the basics and working out whether it's footwork or, you know, working on basic shooting form or you know, a simple dribble move, things that you can always fall back on, things that are part of your game that before you can go and do something fancy or before you can do something that is more advanced, you need to really work on those basic things. And, you know, we've all heard the stories of Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan working on perfecting different kinds of pivots and footwork and simple things that you're looking at it going, God, these are the best players in the world. And they're spending all this time working on these basic, simple things. And that's because those were the foundation for everything that they did that made us, you know, drop our jaw open and stare and be like, I can't believe he could do that. It's all still based on those basic fundamentals that they learned and continue to work on throughout their career. And I think that if you are a player who's out there listening, it's important to remember that you have to continue to work on those basic skills. And even the guys who are at the very highest levels of the game continue to work really, really hard on those basic things. And from a coaching standpoint, it's important to make sure that whether you're working with your team or whether you're working with an individual player one-on-one, that you don't put the cart before the horse and you make sure that every kid is working on their fundamentals day in, day out. And yeah, maybe you can add pieces to it once those fundamentals have been built. But too often, players, trainers want to get to the six dribble move as opposed to just being able to execute dribbling the ball full speed down the floor and shooting a layup. And that's something that I pulled out of what you said, is that being willing as a coach to spend time teaching and improving and working on those basics with players is really what leads to their success in games.
Yes. And just to add and to kind of piggyback off of what you just said about having a solid foundation, and for any players listening, I like to use the analogy of, because everybody knows Lego blocks. And you imagine that big green plate
Right.
That's in all the doctor's offices, right? And all the kids are playing on it, right? So you got that long, and that's like grass, of course, right? So if you put all these and you stack, that's how you develop, in my opinion. Players need to develop their skills and stack them. So you put the yellow block, and then you put the red on top, then the green, and you just, okay, so now, like you said, dribble full court and do a layup. So that's Lego block one. Okay, so now let's dribble down court and do a reverse layup. Boom. All right, so now let's do the basic crossover between the legs from left to right. Boom. So now that's another Lego block. And you just stack each skill. But the problem is, like you said, if you put the wrong Lego block at the bottom, you can put all that fancy stuff on top if you want to, but that you can go as high as you want. That little Lego tower is going to fall because the foundation is just not strong enough.
No question.
Because, you know, guys don't want to do what they see Kyrie doing. It's, oh my God, Kyrie. So, or they'll see guys that can have really great handle, right? Not knowing that he would probably do thousands of basic crossover with one hand. Boom. Boom, boom, repetitions like crazy. And then it's just you add layers to the particular crossover. And without the previous, you're not going to be able to do the crossover to follow it. So they go between the legs. I don't know if you guys ever saw that clip. I always use this as an example too of Kenny Anderson when he was at Georgia Tech. And I think it was against the Duke, and he was on the right wing, right? And Jason, you probably be able to find this clip, but he dribbles on the right wing, right? And he's dribbling with his right hand to the right, then he goes behind the back to his left hand, then he goes between the legs back to the right, and then he goes behind the back again to his left again and makes the layup, right? Well, it's more like a mid-range jump shot kind of. And of course, you got Dick Vitale. Oh, baby, Nipsey Dog, and all of that. So, you know, because that was in the like early '90s.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Dick, do you know who he?
Dick Vitale.
Okay, I found it. Who was the player he did it to? Did you say?
I don't know. Ooh, was it Hurley?
It was Bobby Hurley.
Yeah, I guess they're right. Bobby Hurley. Yes.
We're gonna have to embed this clip in the show notes.
Yeah, so they can know. So that's the players right. Are looking because now he does that live in the game. Now, if he doesn't do that 1,000 times off the court, he's not going to do that in the game. He won't even think to do it. But, like, a lot of guys want to go straight to that clip and do, oh, Bobby Hurley, bang, 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 like that. But you can't do the basic behind the back first, right? So get the behind, do the behind the back seamlessly where you can do it, like, 40 times back and forth without dribbling off your heel or something, and then Lego block stack on top of that and go between the legs and just build from there. So that's something that, you know, since you mentioned the players that are listening, all you players out there, when you see your favorite player make a shot, do a crossover, do a euro, do a sweet reverse, that it's like you do well based off of what you do when nobody's watching. If you take care of your business when no one's watching, then it looks easy when everybody's watching. That's why they see their favorite player. Like, oh, man, it makes it look easy. Well, yeah, because he did it 1,000 times.
Yeah, I think that's a key component to anyone's success. Another quote that I've been seeing a lot, and I don't know that I attribute it to any one person, but just it's just a concept that I've seen mentioned in several different places recently, is just that if you want to really be good at something, and this doesn't necessarily apply just to basketball, but you have to be willing to accept the quote boredom from working on the fundamentals of whatever it is that you're trying to get better at. And so is it fun and exciting to work on reverse pivots every single day as part of your basketball workout? Probably not. It's probably a lot more fun to do that Kenny Anderson move. But if you can't execute a flawless reverse pivot under any type of conditions that you might see in a game, you're not going to be as effective of a player. And I think that's something that when you think about the way that somebody gets to be good at something, whether you think of the 10,000 hour rule or just, you know, the amount of time that you put in on something, at some point in that process, there's going to be boredom. And for most people, when boredom strikes, what do? They walk away. They're like, ah, I don't want to do this anymore. But for someone who truly wants to be good at it, they're going to be able to fight through that boredom. And I think all those pieces of what we were talking about there kind of come together to paint the picture of you got to work on the basics. You got to work on them over and over again. And you have to be willing to do that, which is sort of the price that you pay for being able to have success when the lights are on, which is what you were talking about.
Yep, I agree. I agree.
All right, so from there, give me an idea. Let's go and talk about Illusion. Tell me why you started it, how you started it, and what exactly it is that you guys do and what the mission and vision is.
Well, the name Illusion Institute, of course, Illusion Institute Basketball Training, but Illusion Institute started, well, the name I came up with because I think basketball players are some of the best illusionists out there, magicians kind of. So they make you think they're going left, but they're really going right. They think that they're about to do a jumper, but they're really going to drive by you. So they are, it's like a lot of trickery. It's sleight of hand, especially when you have the skills to do so. Like that play where Jordan goes at the middle, the dunk, and then he switches it with his left hand and finishes it when Sam Perkins jumps up. And then
the Marv Albert call, a spectacular move by Michael
Jordan. Yeah, I know the one. Yeah, a spectacular move by Michael Jordan. Yes, exactly. So that's improv. Like that goes back to what I really liked about it, you know, when I was a kid, just the fact that you can, if you have the skills, you can do that. So anyway, that's where Illusion came from. And then Institute, of course, you know, it's a course of action to learn something. So, but when I started it, it really was on accident, like many businesses do. Like they kind of start, you know what, let's try this. So my nephew came to me and was like, hey, can you help me with my dribbling moves? Like, I want to do some crossovers. Because he was a good scorer, but he would have been a very undersized guard, small forward. So he had to, at his height, he was going to have to be a point guard.
Yeah, handle the ball, right. Yep.
He had to. It was no way around it. So he was like, I need to get my handles together. Because I used to tell him, I said, man, you got to get your handles right, man. You have to, because you're not shooting over nobody at your height. At the level you're trying to go, you're not going to be able to do that. So anyway, so he was like, yeah. So then we started working on it in the garage. And then that's when and then after that, it was just for fun, you know, because it's my nephew, you know, so it's not like, oh man, that'll be $40. It was nothing like that. So it was more like, yeah. And then after we finished and he saw improvements, and I enjoyed watching his process, like you said earlier, the buzzword process. And I saw the process he went through and saw his before and after. And I was like, you know what? There's probably some other athletes that need that. And then I got a Groupon. That's where it started. I did a Groupon. I made a Groupon.
Nice.
For training sessions. And my very first Groupon that a parent purchased. And, you know, I'm in Houston, Texas. So I'm in the Houston area. And then when I did it, when I put that and the player bought it, the dad was like, you know, that's not a lot of people doing what you're doing. Like, I was looking, you know, almost like he chose me by default. Kind
of. Right. Understood. So, I was like, nobody else. Can't find anybody else.
Yeah.
Let's go to Joseph.
Let's go to Joseph. Why not? He's the fallback guy. So. But then, you know, that's where I realized, you know what? Wow. It's actually a market for this because you have the dads like you, Mike, that know basketball, but maybe you don't have the time, right? To make sure your son or you got the element of, oh my God, dad, da, 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 and he'll listen to a stranger before he listens to you, right. Even though
I never used to, believe that until I had my own kids. People used to tell me that before I had my own kids. They're like, you know, I try to tell them the same thing, but he just won't listen to me. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, that makes no sense to me. And then I have my own kids, and I'm like, yeah, I get it. I understand why. I'm like, they hear me talking to them about every single thing. They don't want to hear me talking to them about basketball. So I get that completely. That is so true. And I never would have believed it before I had my own kids.
Yes. You know, so when it comes to that, like, you wouldn't necessarily need, unless you're like, hey, I want him to be comfortable being coached and trained by someone other than myself, unless that's just something you wanted to do.
Right.
You have all the expertise to be able to tell him. So you have the Mike type parent that has the expertise, but maybe they don't have the time, or little Mike doesn't want to listen. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you have the parent that means well, but doesn't know how to go about helping little Johnny be able to play. Like, I want to be on varsity, or I want to shoot like so-and-so that I saw on TV. And they're like, I don't really know. And then you got some of the ambitious dads that maybe they watch YouTube videos, but that doesn't mean you could translate the knowledge to them to make it to where it's understandable. But when I found out that there was a market for it, when it was kind of on accident. So it started off with my nephew, and then it started with a Groupon, and then the rest is history.
Nice. That's tremendous. So give people an idea of, before we get into some of the stuff that kind of drew us together from talking about the scholarship blueprint and what that's all about, which we'll get to in a second, just give people an idea who are out there of what services you provide that you have, that you offer people through Illusion.
Okay, so we offer a holistic approach to, and I don't want to sound like Phil Jackson or something, you know, like some super like yoga, spiritual type approach to it, but it's like a holistic in the sense of, like you said earlier, not just skills. It's skills, it's character development, and it's athleticism. It's like, those are the three pillars that we work on simultaneously. So whenever they start working with us, they do one-on-one training, it's definitely skill development fundamentals. Like, no, we're not doing any of the crossovers that you saw on that YouTube channel. We're not doing any of those. Forget about it. We're going to start in these fundamentals, and then you can work your way up to that. So with skills, and then athleticism, helping with first step explosiveness, vertical leap, things like that. And then, of course, the character development element of it, of learning how to lead, learn how to handle a bad game, how to handle a good game, how to have good sportsmanship, how to be the example for your teammates, and how to stand out even when you're not the best player on the team, and how to handle yourself appropriately to where a college coach would be like, now that's the young lady I want on my team. That's the young man I want on my team. Because sometimes the players don't know that coaches look at that. I mean, because if you're a headache and you average 25, they're like, okay, we'll take the guy that averages 22 because the 25 guy, he's a headache. So we don't want to deal with him or her. So a little about what we do is the holistic approach in terms of the whole player as a person, and help them understand to run their own race, because somebody may be further along than they are, but that doesn't mean they're better than them. That just means you have to be better than you last week. That's it. You versus yourself. Like, yeah. Can you beat yourself? Like, because I always ask a lot of guys, all right, if you were like your ninth grade self, I mean, would you 7-0 skunk your seventh, like your seventh grade self? Is that what would happen? Or would you just bully him because you're bigger than him? Or can you really beat him? You know what I mean? Like, it should be embarrassing. Like, oh man, look at this guy. Like, you just beat the mess out of the older version of yourself. If you're doing that, then you're on the right track. But if you're like doing the same type of moves, you haven't developed, then it's something broken, which is, to me, and I may be jumping ahead and maybe a question you may have, but to me, it's important that the parent really sees a before and after and see improvement, because in this world, and I have nothing against AAU basketball, but in this world of everybody plays tournament, and neglect development of skill. And then after that select basketball season is over, they return to their high school coach looking exactly the same. Like maybe they grew a little, but they still don't have a strong offhand. They still can't finish with their offhand. They still have a hard time catching and shooting, or maybe they have a hard time shooting off the dribble. And it shouldn't be that way. If you spend a whole summer working, playing, playing basketball, you should come back better. So I got a little off track, but overall, that's something that we do. We have the holistic approach in terms of like a factory, where they're from the beginning, and then they come out as the more of a polished product, not just as a player, but as a person as well.
I think it's a great way to approach things, in that I think it's one of the challenges that's out there from a training business standpoint is, you know, how do you convey to parents the value that you're adding to their child as a player and as a person? And I think that what you've talked about is going about doing that is something that you have to be intentional about. And as you said, the AAU basketball world that we all live in today just encourages kids to play games, which of course we all know that no matter what the age you are as a player, everybody loves to play games. And goes back to what we talked about a few minutes ago. Not everybody likes to do the boring work in the gym by themselves, working on their fundamental skills. Everybody likes to go out and play. And yet you have to play, obviously, in order to get better. The game is played by playing the game. But if I'm going to play 6 AAU games in a weekend, and unless I'm the point guard or the best player on my team, how much am I really getting the ball and getting the opportunity to work and get better on skills with the ball? Now, there's other things I can be doing when I don't have the ball. And I think that's one area that the basketball training business probably could do a lot better job of, is teaching kids how to play without the ball and teaching them to make simple moves and those kinds of things. But that's probably a whole other discussion again. But I think if we can figure out a way to make basketball training more efficient from a standpoint of really demonstrating that we're getting people to improve, I think that's a big piece of it.
The Head Start Basketball Holiday Camp for boys and girls in grades 1-6 will be held on December 26th and 27th. Join us for 2 fun days of basketball fundamentals, contests, and small-sided games. You can find more information or get registered at headstartbasketball.com.
One of the things that you shared with me was your questions about how do I go about finding quality training. And so you put together a little video course, The 5 Secrets to Finding Quality Training. One of the things that I really loved about it when I looked through it today was the questions, where you had a section on what should you ask and then what should the answer be. And I just really found that to be extremely valuable, because one of the things that I say a lot here on the podcast, we've talked to numerous people about this, is I think the one missing area in terms of improving the youth basketball space is, how do we educate parents about what they should be looking for in a quality program? And I think that section of this course that you've put together is tremendously valuable. So could you maybe just share, I don't know, 2 or 3 questions that you feel like parents should ask a prospective basketball trainer, a prospective basketball program? What are some things that parents should ask, and what should they be looking to hear when they ask those questions? Because I really thought that section was just tremendously valuable, again, because there's just not a lot of parent education out there. A lot of parents are just wandering around in this wilderness, and they have no idea what they're doing, where they should be, and they might even be with a particular trainer or a particular group and not be happy with the experience, but they just don't know how to go about changing their experience of where they are. So just give us a couple questions that are a part of that course that you think are especially relevant for parents to ask when they're trying to figure out what to do with their child.
Well, first, I appreciate the kind words. Yes, I do think that one question that every parent should ask if they have their daughter or their son that said, you know what, mom, I want to, or dad, I want to get some training, that they should always ask the trainer, what is your plan for my son or my daughter? What's your plan? And if they can't provide you some comprehensive steps, like, all right, first we're going to start off with this, and then we're going to do that, and then, well, can we do this? No, not yet. We'll get to that, but we have to start here. And to lay out a framework, like a game plan, a plan of action, because some trainers don't. And I'm not trying to knock any trainer in the United States of America. No, I'm not trying to knock anyone, but there are some trainers that go by the seat of their pants. And then every training session, they may just, oh, well, today we're going to do such and such. Oh, today we're going to work on such and such. And they have no idea from session to session. From session to session, they have no idea what they're going to do. So I would say the number one question would be to ask that trainer, what is your plan for little Johnny, little Jessica? What's your plan for my son or daughter? And if they don't have something concrete to say, we're going to start off with working on shooting because of this, or like, if they have to explain, does that make sense?
It makes total sense.
That is very important. So that's the number one question. And sometimes that'll stump the trainers that have no idea. Maybe they watched a couple of YouTube videos. They got some cones in their book bag, right, in their backpack, yeah, and they lay out some cones, and then they start dribbling two balls or whatever. Now, so I would say that, okay, the parent should definitely ask, what do you have? What's your plan for my son or daughter? And if that answer isn't sufficient for you, find another trainer. And I would say that even if it's me, if I say, well, this is my plan for your son based off of where they are now, and they say, I don't know. Now, that's the difference between, oh, well, my son is LeBron. He doesn't need to do any of that.
Right.
Now, that's a delusional parent. That's different.
That's probably someone you don't want as a client.
Unless your name is LeBron, because you have a son named LeBron. There you go.
Exactly. So if it's that, okay. But for the most part, if it's something that they don't provide a plan, that's a red flag. And I would say, and I don't even think I put this in the video, but the second one, another good one would be, can that trainer explain the why behind whatever drill they're about to make them do? Because in my opinion, it's important that the player knows the why behind what they're doing. Okay, so why are we doing this form shooting with one hand? You know, because sometimes they do it with one hand behind the back and they're shooting with one hand. Well, why are we doing that? Or why do I have to keep my head up when I'm dribbling? Not because I said so, but why? You know what I mean?
Right. How does that translate to making me a better basketball player?
There you go. Exactly. How does that translate to help me become a better basketball player? And the parent should say, okay, they answer that first question. Well, what's your plan for little Johnny? What's your plan for little Jessica? Oh, well, we're going to do this. Oh, okay, great. All right. And then they follow up with a question. Okay, so little Johnny doesn't really understand what's it about. Can you explain it to him in a way that he understands? And if that trainer has a hard time conveying that, that's a red flag. Because if a trainer is nothing else, they're a teacher. If a coach is nothing else, they're a teacher. And they have to be able to transfer knowledge from them to the player or the player they're training.
Right.
Because oftentimes, like, if you were able to do X when you were playing, that does not mean you could transfer that knowledge and help a player be able to do what you did. Because for you to say, well, it's easy, just do this.
Right.
Boom. Yep. Take these two steps. So the player's like, what? I can't do that. That's why I'm here.
there's no doubt. That is, I think, one of the things that is is very prevalent that you see, which is a guy who was a player, or even I'll take it one step further, a guy who looks like he was a player at some point. Sometimes you just, strictly by appearances alone, a parent will look at two people standing next to each other, and one guy's a 6'6 athletic dude, and the other guy's a 5'6 pudgy overweight guy. And the one guy may be the 5'6 pudgy overweight guy may be the most technically sound teacher of the game anywhere. And the other guy has no idea what he's doing, but the parent is going to gravitate towards that person who looks the part. And I think that what your questions do is they allow a parent to dig deeper into what it is that that coach, trainer, program are capable of delivering. And ultimately, that's really what matters. And I think that parents so often just get caught not really knowing what they're doing. And they talk to another parent, they get an opinion from someone else who's uninformed, and before they know it, they're in a situation where they're paying a lot of money for something that they're not getting a lot of value for, or they're in a bad they're in a bad situation with a coach who's, you know, not doing the things that we would want them to do in terms of how they're treating the child or just in terms of what they're teaching. And that's why I really liked what you came up with those questions, because I think it gives parents a roadmap for how to make better decisions when it comes to where they put their child in terms of basketball.
And you know what, Mike, and again, I appreciate your kind words. I really do. I want to say, just to add to what you said about that player that has professional experience, or, you know, that the lady that played in the WNBA for 14 years or whatever the case is, right? Like, in my opinion, because it's players that I've trained that have no idea, like that story I told you, half of the kids that have come through Illusion Institute have no idea about that story.
Right.
Like,
oh, yeah.
And what I just told you, they had no idea about that. Because now they're trying to compare. No. Run your race. Run your race and be the best you can be and just be your former self. That's all you got to do. But in my opinion, when they start rattling off all of the things they've accomplished on the court, I think that's a bit of a red flag. Now, I'm not saying that all players that have a terrific personal resume in terms of accolades on the basketball court, that they aren't good at training also. I'm not saying that, because there are that some that can do both. But oftentimes, like if I just met you, Mike, and I start rattling off and talk about me is dull, in my opinion. So if I'm talking about me and what I've done, I went here, I played this. This was a highlight I did. And I started talking about myself too much as a trainer. I started telling you I'm trying to puff myself up and say all these different things. I think that's a red flag, because now I feel like it's more, in my opinion, that is something that the parents should view as, OK, now this trainer is more about themselves than my child. It should be what can this trainer do to help my player reach their next level? It doesn't have to be the NBA, WNBA, NCAA. It doesn't have to be any of that. It could be just going from eighth person on the bench to number six, first off the bench, or number six, sixth man coming off the bench to being a role player or a starter or the star, whatever that next level is for them, whatever that may be. It's more important that the trainer knows how to help their child do it, not talk about the things that they have done. Like, I like the fact that, I don't like talking about that. Like, if I had a son, Mike, and I heard you talk about, Jason talked about it more than you did, like when you were at Kent State shooting in threes, that would be a green flag for me. Like, oh my, I love this guy, because he's not pushing himself. He's like, how can I help your son, Joseph? That's it. Like, it's not about what, you know, that you still have a record, which is very impressive, by the way. Now, I'm not saying that. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that players shouldn't do that. You know what I mean? Like, you should, you know,
ultimately it becomes about what you are as a coach, as a trainer, as opposed to what your playing career says about your ability to to teach the game. And I think that that's where sometimes the disconnect occurs. And you said it best in that being a great player doesn't qualify you to be a great coach. And it also doesn't disqualify you from being, you know, from your ability to be a great coach. And I think that, you know, you can look up and down, whether it's the high school level, the AAU level, the college level, heck, the NBA level. And you can see people who had tremendous success after being a very good player. And you can see people who are very good players that turned out to be very poor coaches. And conversely, you can find coaches who have no playing resume whatsoever that are very good. And you can find coaches who have no playing resume that are not very good. It's just like, you know, it ultimately comes down to what is your ability as a coach and how do you continue to grow and improve yourself as a coach or a trainer. And that's what parents should be looking for, is a person's qualifications / ability as a coach, and whether or not they played the game in the past oftentimes is irrelevant.
Yes. It's very much irrelevant in my opinion, because it's a new chapter. And the ability to transfer knowledge, to me, that's most important.
Agreed.
And, you know, and that's something that I believe is very much overlooked when it comes to looking for trainers. So I'm glad that you asked me that question, to be honest, because maybe that can help a parent.
Yeah, I agree. I think if we can help people to make better decisions about where they spend their time and who they spend their time with, I think ultimately we're making the game better and we're making the overall basketball experience better for people. And that's really what it's all about. So let's take it to the next thing that you have that we want to spend some time on. And that's, I think, what first sort of brought us together was the idea of being able to share the scholarship blueprint. So talk to our audience about what that's all about, why you're so excited about it. And then we'll talk a little bit about how, if it's something that appeals to them, how they can find it and take advantage of what you've put together.
Oh, I'm super excited about the scholarship blueprint. I'm like super excited because it's something that a lot of players and are like, man, where was this at? You know, when I was in high school and things like that. But it is the player's guide that's from mentality in terms of not having the D1 or bust mindset and developing character and understanding that college coaches look at more than how high you can jump and how well you can shoot the tray ball. They look at the holistically, they look at you, which is why that's what we focus on when we develop players. So it goes from mentality all the way to literally what to say to the coach in the email, like copy and paste an email and just, you know, maybe don't tell the college coaches this, but you just change the name, like what to say, how to say it. What's the difference between a general mailer and a real recruitment letter?
Right.
Make sure you're eligible in terms of SAT, ACT, GPA requirements, everything from beginning to end. That's what the scholarship blueprint does. And I'm super excited about it because it started off in the paper form. Matter of fact, you and I spoke about it.
Right.
And it was like a spiral book. It was kind of thick. So I was, I had a select basketball team I was coaching at the time, and I printed it out and I gave it to all of the parents. Like, oh my God, this is great. Oh, this is what you do. Oh, this is how you can contact the coaches. Oh, wow. I thought the AAU, and I'm coaching a select basketball team, and I'm telling them that the tournaments are not the end all be all. They're not the answer that you think they are. They can say, oh, we don't want to play anymore. You know that, but I want them to know the right way. So I'm not worried about bringing in more players. So I give them this paper, this, I mean, it's a book. I can't even say it's like 100 something pages. So they and the parents were excited about it. The players were like, oh, okay, this is how you do it. Oh, okay, all right. And it's in phases and all of this stuff. Like, these are your checklist items if you are a freshman. These are your checklist items to do if you're a sophomore all the way up to senior year. And I got a very good response from it. And a player ended up, as soon as one player was like, oh, yeah, they followed it, and they ended up playing somewhere. So, and they started late. They started late in the process, but they got it. And then I said, you know what? I want to see about a way to move this to the modern age, because you and I laughed about it, Mike. You say they've read a little bit, and then it is officially a coaster for all of the for all of the cups on the table. It's a coaster now, or it's propping up that old chair or something like that, because you know these are high school students, and you know they're reading every day in school and class and homework. So to read something extra, it's like pulling teeth for most of them. I won't say all of them. There are some avid readers out there. I won't, you know, stereotype, but many of them will not read extra unless there's a grade attached. Because I remember one summer I had a team, and I made them read over the summer. So I was just like, you know, I would say, all right, every practice you got to read 4 pages by the next time you come. Something simple. And they were reading The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teens. You know, it wasn't a seven Habits of Highly Effective People. There's a Stephen Covey book, but it was his son, Stephen Covey, had wrote the book. And it was, so anyway, I had to make a run, Mike. Like the whole team would have to run if two or three of them didn't read 5 pages. And I was like, wow, over the summer. Wow, so you mean to tell me you can't read 5 pages between Wednesday's practice and Friday's practice? Woo! So anyway, with all of that being said, I'm excited because this scholarship blueprint has been transferred and into a format that I know they'll do. Videos, an online assessment, a printable assignment, an action step assignment. So I'm very excited. I know I may have went on a little too long on that, but I'm hyped up about it because I know how much it's going to help that player that wants to play at the college level but doesn't know how to go about doing it because maybe they don't have a dad like Mike that has been there. That.
Yeah, and I think that anything that's providing education for kids is super valuable because, you know, I mean, with the internet, there's more information available than there was when I was in high school transitioning to college. But there still is, it's almost now like there's an overload of information. And mm-hmm. I think what you've done is you've collated that into a format that a player, a parent is going to be able to tap into, go through that piece by piece, look at it, and then say, okay, if this is the goal, if this is what I want as a player, I want to be able to have the opportunity to play college basketball. I want to have the opportunity to get a scholarship. I can avoid missteps. I can take proactive steps that are going to help me to reach that goal. Now, all this being said, obviously the player has to have the requisite ability and talent, yes, and all the things that we've been talking about all night throughout the podcast. But by being able to have all that in one place that they can refer to and use to help them to reach their goal, I think is invaluable. So, Joseph, we're coming close to an hour and a half here. So what I'd like to do is give you the opportunity now to share with people how they can find out more about what you do with Illusion, how they can get the scholarship blueprint, how they can find those 5 keys to finding quality training. Give us all that information of where people can find out about those things that you're doing, how they can interact with you and your content. And then if there's anything that we didn't touch on that you want to leave as kind of your parting shot, you can do that as well. And then we'll jump back on and wrap up the episode.
Okay. Well, wow. First, it's hard to believe it's been about an hour and a half.
I know. It's crazy. Doesn't it go so fast? We say that almost every time we're doing a show and we're like, we'll look up at the time and we say, wow, I can't believe I'm already at an hour and 15 minutes here. It's incredible. So I think that speaks to the quality of the conversations that, you know, you and I have had tonight. And just, we've been so fortunate to have great guests, and it makes all the difference. So I agree. Yeah. Time goes fast. No question.
Yes. Yes. So to answer your question, the parents will go to ill like sick, ILL, illbasketball.com, and they can find out more about the scholarship blueprint, because what's going to happen is you go to illbasketball.com and then they click on online training, and then it'll have clear as day. It'll say, scholarship blueprint, and then they enter their email address and the first name of their child and their grade. And then they're going to get a series of 10 emails. So not going to flood your inbox or anything like that. 10 emails kind of explaining the scholarship blueprint and what it does and how it benefits the players. And I'll say that for any parent that, unless you are already a college coach, a parent that's a college coach, or if you're a player that, let's say you're a 6'4 girl in eighth grade, you don't need this. You won't need it. Or if you are, maybe you are, because 6'4 isn't tall for a boy, not in college. But if you're like 6'8, or maybe you're 6'4, but you jump in front of the free throw line, and you averaging 35, putting up tremendous numbers or something like that, you don't need this. But those players that are the diamonds in the rough, they need this, because it provides a guide for them from phases, step by step by step. There's no overwhelming. Everything is spoon fed a bit at a time. The same way the email sequence comes explaining the scholarship blueprint. It's not all at one time. It's bits and pieces. So that's how they can find out about the scholarship blueprint. On there, you can contest about training and things like that. I know that you guys are in Cleveland, but we may not be able to do the one-on-one training in person, but the online training platform that we have, that's all across the world. Anyone that needs that. For example, on the online training, there's another, there's a course on there on, like you said, what to look for in quality training, even if it's not with us, like, 'cause we'll turn you away. Because we're not a fit for everyone, because we kind of focus on those players that are a little more serious. Like, hey, I want to be on varsity ahead of time, or I want to play at the college level. Like, I don't want to climb the ladder in high school. I don't want to be on varsity because I'm a senior, just by default. Like, I want to be on there as a sophomore, a freshman, something like that. Those type of players are the ones that we're trained. So sometimes we'll say, well, you know, we're not for you. We're just not for each other, which is okay. But they can find at illbasketball.com, they can find that course, and it's free. That's free. The scholarship blueprint comes with a cost, but that course is free, because I want every parent to know. It doesn't matter who it is. They need to know what to look for when it comes to a quality trainer, and know the right questions to ask to make sure they're not thousands of dollars later. Little Johnny is the same. Now, he's just grown taller, but his skills are still exactly the same. That's terrible. To me, that's bad news. And then also on the online training, there's how to handle a bad game. There's an online course on how the player can handle a bad game. What is a bad game and what is not a bad game? So there are a plethora of items on the website, the skill training, select basketball. But the main thing I'm most excited about is that scholarship blueprint.
It's great stuff. I think it's something that is needed out there in the basketball marketplace. So for people that are out there, if you get a chance to go and check out what Joseph's doing, I think you'll find that he's doing some great things that are going to help players, parents make good decisions about what type of basketball environment they find themselves in. And Joseph, it's been a pleasure having a chance to have you on the show. We can't thank you enough for being willing to jump on with us, share your knowledge with our audience. It's been great. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.